I remembered my earlier question that caused that pause that we edited out. Try to edit that, Joe.
Good evening. I'm Joe. I'm joined by my good friend Adam, and we're getting reacquainted after 20 years apart.
Hello, this is Adam's voice, and Joe's telling the truth. And last time, we began by going over the childhood that we have in common, and reminiscing a little bit, and remembering a few things that we'd forgotten, I think, which is part of the point of this show. But now we're going to get into how things have changed, and we're going to start with growing up, the lost years of our childhood friendship, if you will. And I think this is where things start getting interesting, because we both proceeded along the same course and, you know, just steadily widened. The first thing I want to talk about is schooling. And I'm kind of curious, because we weren't old enough to really appreciate this, Joe, but you were homeschooled, like me, until college, right?
Until college, yeah. Started in fourth grade, because I was in a regular school up through third grade, or maybe it was up through fourth grade, but certainly by fifth grade, I was homeschooled and stayed that way all the way until I went to college.
All right, now, you tell people you're homeschooled, and if they never were, that might be interesting enough, but those of us who have met other homeschoolers and who have been homeschooled know that there are multiple types of homeschooling. I was fascinated when my wife, Anna, who also was homeschooled, told me that her mother joined forces with a lot of other mothers and actually had classes, you know, with sizable groups of children and had field trips and did all of this stuff that just seemed so mainstream to me. She had kind of a halfway normal experience in many ways. And also for sports, she was able to join students in using facilities at a local school. So she got to do all sorts of stuff that I did not do as a homeschooler. So I guess my first question is, what kind of homeschooling did your mother do?
Yeah, and that's a very good question, especially since, as you say, there are as many types of homeschooling systems as there are homeschoolers, seemingly. Almost nobody does it the same way. And ours was no exception. We did a video homeschool curriculum.
Mm.
You may be familiar with Pensacola Christian Academy.
I was about to ask,
Florida.
Was it going to be a Becca, which is the brand
yes.
for Pensacola, or was it going to be BJU? I think they had a pretty strong program.
Yeah, growing up, it seemed like those were the two leading, at least in the circle I grew up in, those were the two leading homeschool curriculums. So yeah, we did the Becca homeschool curriculum. And not just ordering the books and the teaching materials, but also Pensacola Christian Academy had videotaped all of their classes, all of their grades in all of the different subjects, and then would do essentially mail order videotapes. So every couple of months, we would get a new box of VHS cassettes, and you would pop them in. Each cassette had, if memory serves, 4 to 6 classes on it. So you'd pop it in, you'd watch an hour, and you'd be essentially having the viewpoint of sitting in the back of the classroom, watching the teacher teach, watching the students answer questions, interact, raise their hands, the whole nine yards. And you could, and were in fact encouraged to, shout answers and participate verbally towards the TV. No one would ever actually respond to you, but you could feel like you were participating in a real classroom.
Wow.
And so that's what I did, 5th grade through 12th grade.
How did this I never had the VHS cassettes. We never ordered those, at least not to my recollection. But how did the fact that your mother had 5 children work with that? I know each of you must have had a different set of videotapes for your grade, but didn't TV time get very crowded? Did you have to stagger your lessons and schedule them?
TV time would have gotten fairly crowded, except that at that point in the mid to late 90s, they had invented this wonderful concept of the TV VCR combo unit that was a 13-inch television with a VHR built into the bottom of it. And those were not that expensive, or at least I assume they weren't, because we had two or three of them.
Ah, okay.
And so we would be scattered around the house, each popping in our own tapes, watching our own classes simultaneously, and my mom would kind of move from one to the other, just monitoring and making sure we were actually watching the tape.
Mm-hmm, sure. I also had the Abeka curriculum. Yeah, that part's edited out. And it was supplemented with whatever my mother would find at sales or, you know, conventions or what have you, where they sold that sort of material. I never had the VHS cassettes. You know what we did have? We had we had a few recordings. We had recordings of the Animaniacs songs, where Wacko sings all 50 states and their capitals, and the world countries. And
indeed,
my wife, again, who I did not know until I was in my 20s, confirms that she and a number of her other friends learned those states the exact same way. Did you?
I didn't. I guess something we got into a little bit last week and get into a little bit more is just the type of church background we grew up in was very countercultural or perhaps anti-cultural. So there were many, many elements of pop culture that I was blissfully unaware of through the majority of my life. So the Animaniacs I discovered when my wife introduced it to me.
Good job, Christine.
Either in college or shortly after college. But yeah, did not know about any of that at the time. And so while you were learning state capitals through fun songs, we were learning it the rather more prosaic way of brute force memorization. Good old Montpelier, Vermont.
Aw, well, I didn't intend for us to get into the abusive stuff this episode, but that's real sad, Joe. That's real sad.
Well, it's funny how you truly never miss what you never knew you were missing.
That is true, yes. To this day, people can't believe that I've never really eaten ice cream or chocolate stuff, and I just, you know, it's a blank for me. It's no big deal because I had an allergy. Now there's no way to pick it up. So you had a really regimented homeschooling experience in comparison to me. I would read my history book for fifth grade, and there was nothing to keep me on track. So I would just go read my sixth grade history book if it was available. and was always my understanding of one of the great benefits of homeschooling, that you weren't locked into the system and that if you excelled at something, you wouldn't be held back by your peers. As I would learn later, of course, the reverse of that is that you wouldn't fall behind your peers as easily. And I did in some respects. But did you have an opportunity to get ahead of your grade level if you were, if you had a very regimented cassette oriented education like that?
Never actually got ahead of my grade level. Certain classes were a lot easier for me than others were. History, I breezed through without any problems and would frequently be reading ahead in the history book, multiple chapters ahead, just to find out what was going on. Whereas geometry was a class that I dreaded, hated geometry with a passion, still do, as a matter of fact. But the benefit of a videotape over an actual classroom experience is that it stops when you want it to stop, and so that if there's a subject you're enjoying, such as history, you can just let that puppy keep playing and do 3, 4, 5 classes in a row if you want to and get to this wonderful spot where it's like, I'm 3 weeks ahead in history. If I want to skip history for a while, I can. I can end early today because I've got some classes banked. So what do you know? School lets out at 12:30.
Oh, okay. I thought that, or I was imagining when you said that there were 6 lessons on a cassette, that a cassette had a day's worth of lessons.
No, the cassettes were separate by class. So you would have one cassette for history, one cassette for whatever the math was that year, one cassette for English. And it would be 6 days, like a week's worth of English classes back to back on the one cassette. So you would switch cassettes as you went through the day.
Okay, that makes sense. So going back to my earlier question, and as we get into the deeper stuff, I guess, how do you feel about your homeschool education? What are the positives and negatives as you see them?
I always felt I was glad to be homeschooled in comparison to my friends. There was a distinct lack of bullying in my school, and there was...
And you were the oldest.
And I was the oldest. I was always head of the class. It was a really good experience in a lot of ways, not having all of the negative stuff that can come along from being around others of your peer group, because adults quite often would cluck over us being homeschooled. Oh, how do you ever live without the socialization? And it's like, well, your kids get to be surrounded by 20 twerps who are the same physical age as them, but mental ages vary greatly. I, however, get to, well, and I loved reading. I should throw that in. I absolutely loved reading and loved learning things on my own. So I get to go through the day reading about what interests me, and I can get through the classes as fast as I can physically watch the tapes. And then we would always have massive stacks of library books, so I can study whatever I want to study without being picked on for being a nerd or being the bookish one or anything else. Mm-hmm. Now, I suppose I missed out from having similar nerds to surround myself with and draw strength from each other, but overall, I really enjoyed it.
All right. And all of your children are homeschooled, correct?
No, they are actually all in public school.
Really?
Surprising, given that I'm a homeschooler and generally am for school choice and private schools for
this
everyone.
This really is. Joe's all in favor of Betsy DeVos, everybody, just to make this clear. He's fully into it.
Fully into it. Now, the schools around us are good. There isn't necessarily a huge amount to be gained from pulling them out. I have issues with certain of the teachers that the girls have been assigned to. Some of them are clearly far better than others at their job. So I'm not going to say that everything's equal quality across the board, either good or bad. It's very unique and individual. But overall, it's been good. They're learning, and they enjoy, I think they're far more social than I was. They really enjoy being around a bunch of kids their own age and having friends that they can go off and see at school. So we've talked about homeschooling them from time to time, based on stuff we think their teachers aren't teaching them and should be. But overall, the public schools have worked out.
Well, I agree. There was definitely always that atmosphere, or rather that attitude growing up, that we were lucky. Partly because of that countercultural attitude that you described. In a way, it was like being given a special status or having a special assignment. I remember in high school, I was, and this may surprise you, road's not taken, but I was assistant to the network administrator for a semester. And I just felt like the cock of the block, just going in and out of classes freely to work on computers. Clearly being special. You know, when the rules don't apply to you, that is a big shot of adrenaline to any teenager or any kid being freed from the normal structure of things. So we really enjoyed that, or at least I did. And from the way the kids talked, you weren't missing much, because of course all your friends who are coming home from school don't talk about it in glowing terms, and you see it on TV and it doesn't look like anything special. So yeah, you just assumed that it was really that cool.
Well, and one thing homeschoolers talk about a lot that I tend to think is true is the educational opportunities that you have outside of the classroom. my homeschool program was a lot more regimented than yours was, but it was still at the same time much, much less regimented than any of the schools my friends went to, which had its advantages in small ways. You know, if you need an extra long break between class, you need to stretch, walk around the house a couple of times, whatever. You can take as long of a break as you need to before you get back to it. If you want to skip school entirely for a morning to go do other stuff, come back and do classes in the afternoon. If for some reason you need to do classes in the evening, whatever, you've got complete and utter flexibility. And one of the things that I remember very clearly that's been a huge part of what I still wish I could do more is Virginia was just chock-a-block with historical sites, landmarks, and monuments, given as it was that one of the very first English settlements in the New World was at Jamestown, and that was all of 45 minutes from where we lived, not to mention Colonial Williamsburg was just an hour or so away, Colonial Yorktown, similar distance. And so I spent a massive amount of time wandering over the Yorktown battlefields, visiting Colonial Williamsburg multiple times, spending full days there, just taking as long as we wanted to explore everything that was there. Same thing with Jamestown. And so it was, not only did I have freedom to move schooling around in ways that my peers didn't, but I had opportunities to do all of this stuff outside of the classroom to gain a deeper appreciation. And for a kid who loves history anyway, what's better than wandering over local battlefields?
Sure, sure. Yeah, I remember going to, or I don't remember going to those anymore, and I'm going to have to go see all of those Virginia spots again. Which is no bad thing. I won't have trouble talking Anna into it. You would be amazed at how effective the musical Hamilton is in kindling a love of colonial history. I swear, the woman is just on a rampage.
It gives you that feeling of being in the room.
Very much. The room where it happens. Say, someone's finally listening to me. We talked briefly, or we ran over this whole socialization aspect. Where did your friends come from since you weren't in school? And who were they?
Yeah, friends would have been everyone we knew through our local church, which was a decent crowd and a mix of kids that went to public school and kids that went to Christian school. So I wouldn't say I had 30 friends, more like two really close friends, and probably a broader circle of 5 to 10 more acquaintances. But it was enough to definitely have fun, plenty of opportunities to get together and hang out, and so I did not in any way feel that I was lacking for the friends that other people had.
Well, that's good. Did you, were these opportunities through play dates or church activities, weekends, what?
Yeah, just purely everyone that went to the same church. So we'd see each other in Sunday school on Sunday mornings. And then, of course, we were the types that were in church every time the door was opened. So that was Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday evening, and occasional Saturday events. And so, you know, it's not quite hanging out 5 days a week at school, but it was darn close.
Gotcha. And are you still in contact with them?
Not in contact anymore. It turns out moving to a different state for college and then moving to yet another different state for actual employment makes it difficult to stay in touch. So there are a handful that I'm in semi-regular contact with, but most I've lost touch with.
Well, that certainly jives with my experience, and I've moved around a lot more than you. Even in this day and age, who would have imagined that technology would give us the technical ability to never lose people, but human nature kind of failed to keep up? They even say that there's, you know, there's a certain number of people who you're programmed to keep up with, and that that's a very limited headspace, that if you pick up someone new, you tend to drop someone else. Not on a one-to-one ratio, but you understand what I'm saying.
Right. Not to mention, when you're in middle school, junior high, high school, you can be friends with a wide variety of people that you don't necessarily share common interests with. Just the fact that you're in a common geographic area and you're around each other all the time brings a certain level of friendship. But then, at least in my experience, once you go off to college, you start really, everyone starts developing in different directions. And people that you used to be close to, you suddenly discover that you don't really have much in common with. And you start to drift apart just because not being physically close together and not having anything in common, really, it turns out that there's not that much to talk about if you just start chatting online.
Yeah, I've rarely had the opportunity to grow apart from somebody, having moved around as much as I have, but we're adults now, and it's funny, you grow apart from people from childhood, but then you reach a certain age where having a lot in common, if they're still around, doesn't matter so much because you're adults. And that's where my one friend from high school that I'm still really in touch with, and she is a sold-out Christian as one of the few genuine ones I know, wants nothing to do nothing more than throw herself at African orphans. That is her life's work, trying to get back to Africa to take care of the orphans. It's almost, and she married a carpenter. She's practically... a walking cliche, but and whereas of course I am who I am today, but we still see each other every year when we come back to Colorado. I think you're aware of this, but I actually didn't stay homeschooled.
I think I was vaguely aware of that. I think I've managed to forget it mostly, but I do remember hearing something about you actually venturing out into the real world at some point.
Yeah, simple economics led to it. My parents divorced when I turned 14, I guess, and a single mother cannot homeschool. My mother got back her teaching, or reapplied for a teaching license, and went back to being a math teacher. And so I joined the public school system, renowned throughout the world, that exists in Mississippi. It was... quite a change of pace. I went from being homeschooled to, and kind of in this cultural bubble, to this 98% African American blacks, very low level income school where about half the kids were signed up for free breakfasts due to public welfare programs. And me and the other white guy would try to get the white girl for the dance that year because that other one was out of luck. And it was, that was interesting. The desperation there and the contempt and the anger, on the part of not just the students, but the teachers. I remember a really uncomfortable moment where I was so new to this. I asked how I could get breakfast at the cafeteria for the aforementioned program. I didn't realize they were on a program. I just said, hey, teacher.
Everybody else is eating breakfast. How do I get in on this?
Yeah, exactly. I would totally go for that breakfast. And she said, loud enough so students could hear, and this was a white older woman to the only white guy in class, no, that's breakfast from the state because their parents can't take care of them.
Oof.
Right, exactly. And just me absorbing that and also understanding that she just tossed shade on the entire rest of the class.
Painting a target on your back in the process.
Yeah, I was never bullied at that school, though. There is a lot of stuff that went on at that school. You'd hear about it, and it was a high crime area, but everyone was pretty cool. They didn't really necessarily want to hang out with me. They actually thought, and it's true I was, that I had, not to the extent that my teacher thought I had, but I thought I was better than them. Because, of course, I had been homeschooled, and I learned a lot, and plus I was a Christian, and they were doing a lot of bad things, and they didn't have that moral character or that intellectual desire, except for some of these students, of course. So that lasted, just to fast forward here, about a year and a half or so, and then my mother remarried, and she married well. She married a college sweetheart, actually, Steve Janzu. And I went from that 3,000, from that school with 3,000 black kids to a school with 900 white kids.
Wow.
In just west of Denver in the foothills, in this little high-income town that catered to tourists en route to the nicer ski resorts in the Rocky Mountains. So overnight, I went from having acting class in what appeared to be a repurposed closet to this really just like, it looks like a mall, I remember commenting when I walked into this facility, that everything looked so nice. All you needed were storefronts. And so I really got a taste. I didn't stay in the public education system as long as most people, but I feel like I got a taste of both ends of the spectrum before I got out of it.
Yeah, homeschool to Mississippi public school to... now, was that a public school as well in Colorado?
Yeah, they were both public schools.
Okay. But to entirely different ends of the spectrum of public education in America.
Yeah, the demographics could not have been more different, or the income level.
Now, we've kind of glossed over here. This is at least two moves at this point, because when we'd last left each other, I'd been in Virginia and you'd been leaving Virginia, and now you were in public school mm-hmm. in Mississippi. Was there anywhere in between Virginia and Mississippi, or
no, that was it. I had, after my parents divorced, my father, of course, was no longer, well, I mean, since my father was in the Navy, that's why we moved around. But once my mother decided where to live, and the Ferris wheel stopped.
Okay, so you did the school in Mississippi and then moved to Colorado, then I assume when your mother remarried.
Yes, that's correct. And I'll tell you, man, I mean, I was originally a little excited because, of course, you know, this is just like Saved by the Bell. I got teachers, I got desk, this is homework, and you must be the bully. But it was a slaughter. I'll tell you, the way I generally put it is that I managed to become decently social in my senior year, and I spent the rest of the time figuring it out. Sophomore, junior year, it was rough, and it's. I think we come at it as adults today that we're, you know, you're a parent. And it's easy to discount this this intangible concept of socialization, but I certainly felt the difficulty of having to play catch up there. I didn't entirely learn what I needed to learn in high school either. I'll tell you, the boot camp for socialization is being a vacuum cleaner salesman, which I was briefly after high school, but before college, when I was just taking some time off and figuring things out.
I definitely want to dig into that, but before we leave socialization, since hopefully we will have people listening to this who aren't familiar with homeschool and homeschool culture, I think socialization, there can be multiple different levels too. Because I can definitely see your point where if I'd been dropped into high school, public, private, or otherwise, it would have been a real learning curve figuring out how to survive, how to interact with everyone around me. And I was by no means unsocialized, but my socialization was primarily with adults. I was extremely comfortable around adults. I could have intelligent conversations with adults, knew how to hold my own in that sphere, when to speak up, when not to speak up, etc. But and I had friends, but my friends were largely self-chosen, and so I hung out with people that I liked and that I had a relationship with, and so from that angle, I was socialized, but as far as dealing with people who you don't really like on a regular basis, that I would have been more unfamiliar with. And I didn't have to ease into any of that until college. And I think some of the benefit of college is that a decent chunk of people are more mature. There is certainly a large chunk of college freshmen who are not mature, but it's much easier to avoid them, I think, than it is to avoid the immature in high school.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, I too had no trouble discussing things with adults, but peers are a different matter. Also, I think this feeds, we won't discuss this until a little later, but insofar as dealing with the opposite sex is concerned, that's a...
that's a whole different side of socialization.
And yet, part and parcel of it, actually. Beyond that, I think... discomfort and with a person tends to translate to no small degree to enmity, to a lack of understanding of them. And I had a lot of assumptions about other kids and about other people that I think I had to unlearn. It's almost like the common stereotype of the snowflake who thinks he's so special and he's brilliant, and then he actually goes to work and finds that almost everybody else is actually about as smart as you are.
It can be a rude awakening.
Right, exactly. And I think that's true outside of just pure intellect as well, that you a lot of assumptions we make about people outside of our spheres aren't founded, as well-founded as we'd like to think. Any additional words about schooling, or questions, thoughts, humorous anecdotes, diatribes?
I'll just throw in, I should have been looking at my notes all along, because this would have fit in well earlier, but I'll throw it in now. Besides being homeschooled, like I say, there was the other opportunities, and there were a couple of things that stuck out in my mind as I was thinking about this topic earlier. One of which, Old Dominion University used to have, and still does have as far as I'm aware, summer engineering camps that they would run to expose students to different forms of engineering, give you something to do during the summer weeks, but also give you a little bit of education. And so that was something I did one summer. I think it was just 1 week. I think it was every day you were dealing with a different engineering discipline. And so that was fun. We learned a little bit about surveying, learned about George Washington and his early surveying career. And as the teachers enjoyed telling us, George Washington was an active young man going around surveying what was Virginia at the time. And there's reason to believe he was the father of the nation in more ways than one, due to his early career traipsing around the backwoods and interacting with the people there, shall we say.
Got it.
But that was also, you know, I think part of this discussion is just lessons we learned growing up or what got us to where we are. And one aspect of that sticks out to me in particular. We had one day where I think we were doing principles of flight or something, and the assignment was to build a balsa wood airplane. One of these with a propeller and a rubber band, and you wind it up, and it's supposed to actually, as the rubber band unwinds, spin the propeller fast enough for the plane to take off and fly through the air.
I recall this.
I was not good with my hands, and had issues putting the plane together, and it multiple times wanted to just junk the entire project in the most physical, smashing way possible, and not finish it. And my parents insisted that I finish it, and it turned out, to my great surprise, that I actually was able to put it together and even get it to fly. And that has stuck in my mind ever since as part of the reason why I find it hard now to give up a project before I've bludgeoned it into success, because having once experienced that if you just keep trying, eventually you can figure out a way to make it work. Now, whenever I get into a project, and this has repercussions pretty much across the last 20 years, once I get into a project, I don't stop until I figure out a way to make it work.
That's cool. Formative experiences.
Formative experiences. And then leading into, and we'll talk about the job more, but one of the opportunities I had was that there was a gentleman in our church who was formerly of the U.S. Navy and knew someone who was formerly of the Navy SEALs who was running a computer consulting company at the time. And was able to hook me up with him to go and actually spend a couple of weeks worth of classes having him teach me database programming. And that was something I was able to do extracurricular to learn probably around sophomore year of high school, get an education that I am quite sure that none of my peers really had access to. And then that ended up leading into my first actual real paying job. So on the topic of schooling, and before we quite leave it, that's what I would say is homeschooling gave me opportunities that I definitely would not have had I been in public school.
I was fortunate in that the public school I went to, at least in Colorado, who knows what the beleaguered teachers in Meridian, Mississippi would have been able to do for me. I was quite fortunate that they encouraged my excessiveness with regard to my particular interests. My English teacher, Kurt Nichols, hey, Mr. Nichols, was kind enough to accept a document of whatever size from me every semester as a half point extra credit. And so, and this would, of course, be delivered at the end of the semester. So the grace of this man to accept a 50-page story and read it and grade it when he had essays and tests due in that same period cannot be understated. Who knows if I would have had that same drive if I'd been introduced to public school at an earlier time. I don't think you can really say one way or the other. Certainly nobody else was doing that in the school, to my knowledge.
Now, homeschool has a way of making you think that that sort of thing is just a natural thing to do.
Yeah, and then when people don't stop you, you just go ahead and do it.
Exactly.
Oh, well, you mentioned jobs. So your first job was working on databases.
Working on databases, doing programming. Now, that wasn't actually my first job. That was my first paying job.
That's what a job is. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
No, a job is doing anything that you don't want to do.
I know this is what you're telling your children right now because you're not paying them, but...
No, they actually do get allowance for doing chores around the house, and the amount of allowance they get is directly tied to the amount of chores they do, or in some weeks, do not do.
Okay.
Now, the first thing I ever actually got paid for was mowing grass, which taught me one very important lesson, and that lesson was I detest physical labor, especially physical outdoor labor, more than almost anything else in the world. Partly because it was Virginia, and when you're in Virginia, you get to mow grass in the summer when the temperature is around 90 degrees and the humidity is around 90%, and that's just miserable any way you slice it. And then there's the realization that after the end of an hour or an hour and a half's worth of work, you're sitting there holding $15, which when you're an early teen, 15 is not exactly to be scoffed at. But at the same time, you look at it and you think it's going to be an awful lot of work to accumulate this into something sizable.
Mm-hmm.
So I got out of mowing grass as soon as I could. And my actual second job was at a place that I'm sure you're at least passingly familiar with, the Armed Forces Staff College Library.
Mm-hmm.
Which there was a gentleman in our church who worked there as a librarian.
I actually helped my friend put books away there once.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Yeah, so we had a gentleman in our church who worked at the Armed Forces Staff College Library as a librarian, and I was interested in books and interested in technology, and he said, well, we've got something of a need for cataloging new books that come into the library and getting them entered into the computer system so that we can actually track them. So for a couple of months, that was what I did. I would go in a couple of times a week to the Staff College Library, to a windowless room in the back lit only by fluorescent lights, and I would pick up a stack of books and a stack of barcodes, look the book up in the computer system, put a barcode sticker on it, and scan it to associate the two together, and get some experience that way, which was fun for a while, boring after a while, but it was actually getting to do real work around computers, which was fun in its own way.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And you rode that through high school?
You rode that until probably about 15, because it was about 15 and a half that Norm Houston, the gentleman who was teaching me database programming, finished the course that he'd put together for my benefit, and then decided to offer me a job doing some small programming tasks for him. And I remember I was 15 and a half when that happened, because that was the first time I ran into the iron rule of bureaucracy and government regulation, when I discovered to my horror that at age 15 and a half, you actually had to get the permission of the city of Norfolk in order to be able to hold down a paying job. 16-year-olds were the only people old enough to actually work a job on their own initiative. Anything younger than that, you had to have permission. So I remember taking a trip down to City Hall to fill out the appropriate forms, and I don't remember if they gave it to me right on the spot or if I had to wait a couple of weeks, but eventually got an actual physical permit showing that I was allowed to earn a salary. That was the job where I actually started making real money for the first time, something that actually accumulated and added up, and that was addictive.
Having money is nice.
Having money is nice. So that was my first experience at work, aside from mowing grass, all computer related. But you mentioned something about being a vacuum salesman.
Well, it's almost, I don't know, I guess that's in purview. You know, growing up, it was after high school. And my job experience before that was actually negligible and almost non-existent, to be perfectly honest. I really did not work for money through school growing up, and not even for some sizable part of college, I have to admit. And I think if I have children, that I will, in fact, have them do it, because I think I would have been better for me to have done so. I managed to get over that mental hump when the time came, and it really, this is one of those cases where ideology and culture help, because I had spent my entire life reading about people who had trouble working. And, I had Ayn Rand's shrill Russian voice ringing in my ear, so I dared not, out of self-respect, flinch in the face of this universal duty.
No one is more to be pitied and despised than the moocher who lives off of the charity of others, I believe is how Ms. Rand would put it.
Exactly. Right, and she was nice, as it turns out. I read every article on townhall.com that was posted through high school. You can imagine what that does to somebody. But yes, my first real job, I guess, was being this vacuum salesman, and that was on commission. If you've never seen it, and you can't watch it while the kids are around, because it's got a lot of language, nothing else, just a lot of language, there's a movie called Glengarry Glen Ross. Have you ever seen it?
I have not seen the entire movie. Now, I've seen Alec Baldwin's extremely famous scene from the movie, but the rest of the movie is a complete blank to me.
It's on Netflix. If you ever watch that, that is almost exactly what being in that environment is like. It was introduced to me by another salesman, in fact. there are, you know, the mechanics are slightly different because they're selling real estate instead of vacuums. But I could pick the people I worked with out of that movie, and they were all being played by famous actors. It was incredible. It's a favorite now as a result. And yeah, it wasn't door to door. What happened was a telemarketer would inform the more
bored, shall we say?
No, I was going to say gullible people in the city that they had won a free vacation or a free stay at this resort or that resort. And all they had to do was be at home when we came and gave them the certificate. And then, and while they were there, we would give them a demonstration of a new product and get their opinion on it. And sure enough, I would show up with my vacuum cleaner, and if all went well, then I would probably be there for a couple of hours showing them this device.
Oh, wow.
And I would receive either the first payment on or a check for the full amount of about $3,000, which was the cost of a unit. Now, the interesting things about this job, because it is an interesting business. In fact, a novelist friend of mine, or my mentor, is writing a story about a vacuum salesman right now, and I'm guiding her through the process. So soon there's going to be a novel based on me, so watch out for that. But first of all, yeah, I mean, they're $3,000, but even though I got really good at selling these vacuums to the point where I was selling one out of every two houses I went to, I had to stop after about a year because I wasn't making enough money. And the reason why that is because of credit. If they have good credit, then you get favorable terms from the bank. Usually we went through Wells Fargo, and then I would get, say, $200 of that money, or even as much as $500, but, you know, it was good. But, of course, people who buy $3,000 vacuum cleaners willy-nilly tend not to have great credit. And the banks that were willing to loan them the money for that purchase took a much higher part of the profit. So consequently, I would receive $20 for that night's work.
Ooh.
So you see, that's not sustainable. And that's how the whole business is set up. There are a few people who fly high and actually get really good at it. But in the main, it's basically made to burn out suckers. So that was an interesting experience. But I did get good at talking to people, like I said. If you can beg for 5 minutes of someone's time and stay in their house for 3 hours when they weren't expecting you that day, then you've learned how to talk your way through a door. And I'm happy about that. I'm not going to say it was worth the experience, because how do you judge that? But after that, I went to college, and I no longer felt nervous walking into a room.
No, that is certainly one of the more valuable life experiences you can gain. I agree, it's hard to quantify whether or not it was worth the time you spent in the job, but being able to walk into a room or walk up into a stranger and strike up a conversation and not be intimidated is a surprisingly hard thing to learn.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And like everything else, it's something that happens through practice. The more you do it, the less you fear the consequences. And occasionally the consequences almost tipped into physical violence. Sometimes people really don't want you in their houses anymore. One man went off for what I'm pretty sure was his gun.
I do have to ask, at what point did you tell them that it was a $3,000 vacuum cleaner?
Oh, at the very end, of course.
Of course.
And I had ability to negotiate that price to some degree, you know, much like a car salesman. But, yeah, that was definitely the last part you mentioned.
Now that you've seen this fantastic, fantastic machine, I'm sure you'd all agree it's worth $10,000, but we're willing to give it to you just for $3,000.
Well, that's what you do, exactly. No, you go over, you know, the warranty and how much longer it'll last than your standard unit. and then you go over, you know, the price of it will save on the wear and tear of, say, your carpet, because a certain amount of, because dirt and dust wears out stuff. And so, of course, if your curtains last 2 years longer, then you factor that in. And so by the end of it, you have the math to show them that actually they're getting a really good deal in theory. And perhaps in practice, it didn't really matter because, of course, you know, cash flow is an issue for most people. but nevertheless, yeah, that's exactly right.
It reminds me of the few window demonstrations we've had over the years of companies wanting to come in and sell us replacement windows that have many, many wonderful features. And then you get to the end of the presentation and find out it's going to cost $10,000 to do the windows in a fairly small house. And that's the point where, yeah, you tend to want to just throw them out and say, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. So listen, you said a job is something that you don't want to do, whether or not it's for money. And we discussed earlier the definition of a hobby, which is a job that you do because you love it, not because you're getting paid for it, or it's work that you do without getting paid for it. So what are your hobbies, Joe?
My hobbies have really revolved around computers for, I'm going to say, since I was about 10. I mean, I don't remember the exact age, but pretty much the first time I got my hands on a computer, I was just utterly fascinated. You know, before then, I'd been playing with Lincoln Logs and Legos, and you can build a certain amount of stuff with Legos especially. But I always got to the point where, okay, I've built this really impressive car, but in order for it to do anything, I'm the one pushing it around. And that's, it loses its appeal after a while. And then I got my hands on a computer and realized I can put something together, and when I'm done, it runs on its own, and it actually does something useful without me providing the motivating force. And that just absolutely fascinated me, that one could learn how to do that and have that kind of effect. And so my grandfather gave us his hand-me-down computer when he bought a new one. I can still remember the specifications. It was an IBM PS1, had a 25 megahertz processor, and a whopping 100 megabyte hard drive. Was running DOS 6 and Windows 3.1. And it came into the house kind of for the entire family, but I pretty much claimed it as my own right away. You know, it turns out you couple that with a local library that, wonder of wonders, has a computer section with all kinds of books on computer technology, and there's almost no end to what you can teach yourself at that point. So it's pretty much from that point on until now, computers have been my main hobby, just figuring out all of the different ways to make them go, and all of the different ways to break them, and then to put them back together again after you've broken them. So I went through a series of operating systems, you know, started out with DOS and Windows that was pre-installed on the computer. Had an uncle that introduced me to IBM's OS2 operating system, which was like DOS and Windows on steroids, and tinkered around with that for a couple of years, and then discovered, you know, there's this whole workstation, and I mean workstation in the seriously expensive version of the word. It's this whole workstation operating system called Unix. Hideously expensive. The hardware it runs on, hideously expensive. But there's a homebrew variant called Linux, and you can get it for free on the internet. All you have to do is spend a couple of days downloading it onto a stack of 44 floppies. And then you too can feed those floppies one after another for most of an afternoon into the system, and you can be running your very own workstation operating system. So I did that. I would say I was probably more of a pain in the neck to my dad especially than anything else, because he would occasionally sit down at the computer and want it to send an email or play solitaire, and he would sit down in front of it and it would be running something that was completely different than it had been running the previous day, and he would be trying to figure out just tell me where solitaire went. Just tell me how I get in to solitaire. And do you have to rearrange it every 3 days? Well, yes, of course I do. But that was where I spent an inordinate amount of the free time that I got from being homeschooled, went into teaching myself how to mess around with computers.
It's funny that we had such different hobbies and yet led such parallel lives, because I too monopolized the computer, and I too got in trouble for it, although my sin was that my father would buy, a old German Bible's worth of printer paper and put it in the printing machine, and then it would be gone, you know, when he got back. And he'd want to know when in the world it happened, and I'd say that I'd printed off my latest novel, plus drawn a lot of illustrations for it. And that's plus, of course, the internet bill, because back then it cost you per hour to get on that thing, and there was this whole crazy world of stuff that I could access once we got AOL and Prodigy. But yeah, writing. It's always been writing. It was less of it during my 20s. I went through a serious and depressing little dry spell, but every writer has their writer's block era. And as you know, I write professionally these days, so not sexy stuff, but it's cool to be paid. You've always felt that your best point was. There is a satisfaction in that that can't be beat, or status. And that's good, because writers have no status.
You only have status once you've reached the New York Times bestseller list. And until then, you are the least status person.
Scarcely that anymore. The New York bestseller lists are diluted. Entertainment? How'd you fill your days? I kind of feel like there's a continuity here. Let me just go ahead and throw this out there. But, you know, you took to computers, I'm willing to bet, in part because you spent so much time reading about them before you finally had your own. You know, a kid who's raised on Asimov and all the rest has a romantic concept of the computer to begin with, I would imagine.
That's very much true. Yeah, I'd grown up reading Asimov, reading Heinlein, both of which authors threw a fair amount of computers into their stories. Now, their computers were room-filling behemoths, being that they were writing in the 50s and the 60s. But computers nonetheless, and even more fascinating with Asimov, was androids, computers that walked around and had personalities. So when I wasn't working on computers, entertainment was primarily reading. We lived in Norfolk, but we could get library cards to the Virginia Beach Library System. Now, if you're not familiar with that area of Virginia, Norfolk is a poorer town. Virginia Beach is a richer town. Virginia Beach had much nicer libraries than Norfolk did. The Norfolk Central Library downtown was pretty awesome. The other Norfolk libraries, not so much. But Virginia Beach, now there was a city with some nice libraries. And we could get library cards to the Virginia Beach Library System. So there was a small community library near where some of our friends lived, the Bayside Area Library. And I spent many, many hours going through their shelves. I think, as I said last time, literally reading every book or very close to it off of their science fiction section. Now, to be fair, it wasn't a huge science fiction section. I think it was one shelf front and back. So, but, you know, multiply that out by however many books you can fit on 8 shelves worth of 8 feet long. It was a lot. I read through most of it. That I would say was my primary entertainment. You know, there was some TV mixed in, would watch Star Trek Voyager to keep the science fiction going, but it was primarily reading.
For me, of course, there was the reading aspect. I was voracious as well. And there was the writing. But I spent an inordinate amount of time, entire nights, school nights often, online. Chatting and talking with like minds on the internet, which at that point was my outlet. We've talked about friends and social life a little bit, but after I moved to Colorado, I was essentially friendless for almost the rest of my school days, which is to say that even though there were people I liked, beyond the whole socialization aspect, I lived in a cabin in the woods in the Rocky Mountains, and it was difficult to get places. You know, there was a point, I imagine, in your upbringing where you got your car, and then you could scoot around and go meet people. It wasn't necessarily true for me. And so there was this seriously isolated situation I was in where my my ability to connect with people came through the internet, which led to friends, actually, that I still have today. And there's a new type of friend, by the way. I met my oldest continuous friend, I think, right about the same age as you, you know. So, you know, I first met him, you know, quote unquote met online when I still knew you, and I met him for the first time on my wedding day.
Oh, interesting.
He actually lived in Atlanta. I didn't know this until at 3/4 of the way through our relationship at that point. Because back then you didn't tell people your real names.
Or locations.
Right, exactly. And that just sort of, those rules just sort of melted away eventually, and suddenly you knew where everybody was. It was a very gradual thing. But, yeah, and I'm sure I'll see him at some point in the near future. He's been really busy, and I've been really busy. He lives around here. And so I have these, you know, these lifelong presences in my life that I still speak with kind of in the way that everyone does. Now everyone has them, you know, their Facebook. And they become these just disembodied voices that occasionally pop out of the ephemeral cyberspace in order to either criticize your political opinions or like your picture of your cat. But there are some really old voices in my life, a handful of them. And these people were kind of really formative for me growing up. They were, several of them were older, and I looked up to them, and I got, you know, as everyone does, I got cues from them as to what was popular and what wasn't, what to go buy in the comic shop, what movies were good. And then we'd discuss them online after we'd absorb them. And so that was interesting. They more than anything, were my entertainments. You know, we'd write fan fiction together. We'd chat together, role play together in chat rooms. That was a big part of my life.
Now, this may be the right time to throw in. We've been saying in the introduction to the show that we're getting reacquainted after 20 years apart, but that's only partially true. We've been in off and on contact ever since we were together back in Virginia.
That's true. I never quite lost track of you, but for the life of me, I still don't understand how. I know that...
AOL Instant Messenger.
AOL Instant Messenger, was that it?
AOL Instant Messenger. I still remember your old screen name.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
That's, oh, you said it. Oh. Now people can look up the fan fiction.
We can edit that right out. No, there was a surprising amount of fan fiction published under that, well, published under that name.
Oh, well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I'm still known as, since I had just happened to have a screen name which divided into an actual fairly normal sounding name, several of those friends still call me Ben, you know, in person.
Which is confusing enough, since you also have groups of friends that use your name and your middle name.
Yeah, I'm a real international man of mystery.
But no, we stayed in off and on contact through AOL Instant Messenger. It wasn't continuous, from what I remember. It would come and go, and every so often we'd see each other online after a gap of 6 months, and, oh, hey, you're still around. But I do remember, it was one of my memories growing up, playing Star Wars role-playing games online through AOL chat rooms with you and some of your other friends.
You stuck your head in a few times. You never got on the schedule with us to where you were always there on a Monday night or what have you. But yeah, I remember doing that and enjoying having you.
Yeah, that was good times, especially because role-playing games when I was growing up, when we were together in person, was Dungeons and Dragons, which in our community, Dungeons and Dragons was looked down upon as the sign of all that was evil in the world.
It was witchcraft. Your kids were practicing witchcraft.
Right, you get sucked in with an innocent game of Dungeons and Dragons, and before you know it, you're snorting coke and sacrificing to the devil. It's a straight line progression. But Star Wars role-playing games, I mean, that was different. My parents, they weren't so sure. It was still a role-playing game, and that was it.
Right.
But it was Star Wars, and that's kind of okay. So that was my only introduction to role-playing games, was with you in AOL chat room.
That's cool. I'm glad that I could be that for you, because they were certainly something I did fairly regularly. But I had that same, that was the same workaround that I had. You couldn't play Dungeons & Dragons. That particular brand was off-limits. And in fact, I couldn't even do anything involving magic, which meant that bizarrely, out of the Saturday morning cartoon lineup, I could not watch the Smurfs, but I could watch the X-Men.
That's wonderful how that works growing up.
Yeah, and I worked this distinction for everything that it had. I remember playing, you know, medieval sword and sorcery type games with my kids, with my friends. But if we were over at my house, I demanded that they refer to the magic as power. Or powers.
Oh, nice.
Which is what superheroes, of course, refer to all their tricks as. And that did it. I knew that we would be safe. It's a lot like how God supposedly doesn't speak German, so you curse in that language or what have you. You legalism is not a foreign concept to a child.
No, it's a perfectly natural concept. This I can do, this I cannot. There's a bright line dividing the two. I like this. I can work this system.
Uh-huh, yeah, we were, they're smart, kid. Oh, man. Well, we seem to have gotten through almost everything, Joe, except for... we've saved this to the end because we're hoping Christine's gone to bed.
Well, I'm actually going to backtrack before we go there. I'm going to finish out with friends and social life because I feel like my entertainment, you touched on friends' social life as part of entertainment because online was your entertainment and... that was also where most of your friends were, it sounds like.
Isn't conversation a big part of entertainment when you're a kid? Kids don't shut up. They want to do nothing so much as talk to their friends. Even if you're an introvert, you want to talk to your friends.
This is true. For me, though, it really broke down into separate spheres, because there was the hobbies and there was the entertainment, which was primarily computers and reading. And that I did at home, that I did on my own. But friends and social life was a separate sphere. And like I say, I had the friends from church, but as we got into junior high and high school, that became a form, or there was entertainment I did with them that was separate from what I did on my own. And so my memories of my high school years involve, and we're going to touch on this later, I think, when we talk about sports, but in high school, heavy doses of shooting basketball hoops. You know, we had a gym attached to the church, and I'd done Little League as a kid, hated it, dropped out, and hadn't really done anything with any kind of sports at all until I started hanging out with this crew. And they got me interested in basketball, which... before you hit puberty, is a really good sport to play because you can have a lot of fun running all over the place, throwing a ball back and forth, heaving it up at a hoop. Everybody's on roughly an equal level. And then you hit puberty.
The girls sprout up anyway.
Well, yeah, you hit puberty and you suddenly realize your best friend has a seven-inch advantage on you, and suddenly shooting a basketball over him becomes a very challenging matter because he's suddenly swatting down everything you're throwing up. But that's what I remember friends' social life was hanging out with them, shooting hoops, and if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be a football fan. They were the ones that introduced me to the NFL, and that was back in 96, and I remember when that was because I was getting into football. We lived in Virginia. The Norfolk, Virginia area, Virginia Beach area, does not have its own professional NFL team. There's the Washington Redskins, but they're 4 hours to the north, and no one in the area really felt any degree of loyalty to the Redskins. Not to mention Norfolk is a Navy town, so no one feels any loyalty to any one team anyway, So it's like, okay, football seems kind of cool, but who should I root for? I said, well, it's Green Bay. Green Bay's got a young quarterback who's pretty darn good. You'd probably enjoy watching him play. Goes by the name of Brett Favre. So I said, okay, we'll do that. I'll root for them. And that was the year, interestingly enough, that Green Bay won a Super Bowl. So first season rooting for a team, they win the Super Bowl. I thought, well, here we go. This is all right. And it wasn't even I was a bandwagon hopper, because I had no idea they were even in contention for the Super Bowl until it was actually happening. But here we go. This is going to be a thing. And then, of course, it was another 13 years, 14 years until they won another one.
Well, let me just interrupt right now and say that if I let my first Super Bowl experience color my perspective as much as you let yours, then...
You'd never watch another game.
Yeah. We are recording this the day after the Falcons totally tossed away a 28-point lead and to the Patriots, New England Patriots, I should say. So... we're still hurting here in Atlanta, folks. Please continue, Joe.
So that was me. My friends, I would say, hugely influential just in the fact that they introduced me to basketball, which I played for a while, still enjoy watching, didn't play in any organized sense, just pick up games. But the NFL, which I've become an increasingly bigger fan of ever since. And then the job that I had doing the programming for Norm Houston, there were a couple of other kids there around my own age that I would hang out with. And so doing stuff with them with computers, that was my element of a peer group that was into the same hobby that I was, to some degree, the same amount as I was. And so having people, like you said before, having people you could look up to that could mentor you, that could teach you, I was able to get that from my friendship with them, learning more about computers and each of us helping each other along with what we were learning.
Mm-hmm. Were they all about the same age as you?
About the same age, 2-3 years older in some cases. Mm-hmm. Not exactly the same age, but close enough that we could all have a lot of fun hanging out together.
Yeah, 3 years or so is fine. I was just curious because I church friends and all the rest.
Yeah, it's interesting. I associate it with being homeschooled, but I always feel like most of my friends have been older than me for most of my life, and I'm cool with that.
Yeah, well, it definitely keeps you learning, because you always have the, because everyone else is always a little ahead of you. It's like being the youngest brother, I assume.
I'll assume, yeah. I was the oldest, as were you, so we never got to experience that end of the spectrum, but yeah, it's fun having friends who are a little bit ahead of you that can blaze the path that you can then follow.
Mm-hmm. And you do look up to them, at least in high school. I think years later, you know, that kind of disappears, not least because life happens and a lot of your friends turn out to not be as immortal or turn out to be much more judgmentally impaired than you realize. Like, man, I remember I used to think you were smart. So I know we still have one section to go, but one thing that I find interesting, what we've said so far, I guess, or to sum up, when I think about school or growing up, I recall having this very strong sense of identity. They say that growing up is all about learning who you are. I feel like I had this idea of who I was, and that growing up, what I've learned is that so much of it was artificial, that I could have been more, you know, I could have been more into sports. Like, you were talking about football, and I was just like, no, sports is for meatheads. You know, I am a reader and a student and Christian and so on and so forth. But you know, I am not into sports. Whereas today, you know, I just watched a whole NFL game, and I enjoyed myself, at least until the end.
Common feeling when facing the Patriots.
Yeah, I imagine so. I don't know. It's interesting. I imagine this runs through your head much more as a parent. But whenever I imagine myself in high school, I find myself trying to figure out how I could explain to someone at that developmental level the things that I know now. And it's a challenge I've never quite believe I've cinched.
And I think to a large degree, if I was going to tell someone in high school what I've learned now, a lot of it is just maturity and toning it down. Because I feel like elements of my personality, they were all there in high school. Mm-hmm. And what mm-hmm. I do now was in embryonic form in high school. But it was mm-hmm. mixed with a healthy dollop of assuming I knew everything about everything. Mm-hmm. And then having 15 years of actually finding out all of the ways in which my knowledge was insufficient.
Mm-hmm.
So now I no longer feel that I know everything about everything. I feel that I know a great deal about a great deal, but I'm aware of where there's holes in my knowledge. And I think that's hard to get across to someone in high school, because some people in high school do have a certain amount of knowledge, and it's hard to communicate, yes, you have that, but here's all of the areas where there are gaps that you don't even realize are gaps yet in your life.
Learning what you don't know would be a good way of summarizing a lot of what growing up is about. Not to mention understanding and ambiguity. Cool. So I'm interested in hearing how you fared in the wood chipper that is teenage love. And also just, yeah, no, I can't wait to hear this because, not least because I knew the girl that, you had some run-ins with. I can't even remember her name. Laura?
Laura.
Oh, well, I can remember her name. That's great. Yeah, so that happened. Take it away, or do you want me to start while you collect your thoughts?
No, I think I can dive in. I've always, when it comes to romance, I would say I'm rather single-minded. And hopefully you remember what I said earlier in the conversation, which I was, of course, totally farsightedly planting a seed that is going to grow into an oak at this point. When I said that in the summer engineering camp, I had discovered the virtue of trying until you succeed and continuing to pound your head against the wall until you finally achieve a breakthrough. And I tried to apply that to romance with less than stellar results. Laura was one of the friends that I'd had for a long time growing up, and for a long time it was just purely a platonic friendship. I started thinking of her in a more romantic fashion and realizing, hey, I've got a lot of friends I enjoy hanging out with, but I've got one person in particular I enjoy way more than most. But one of the tougher things to learn in high school is, or junior high, is how to talk to a member of the opposite sex about romance without completely seizing up and making an idiot out of oneself. It's a lesson I still haven't actually learned, to tell the truth. So the first time I tried to tell her that I was interested in her, it didn't go so well. We were at a ice skating event with the youth group. Just going to a skating.
Okay, how old?
I'm going to say 14, but that's 15, but that's only because I really have no idea what age it actually was. But it was in that general ballpark, just by virtue of the fact that I know how long I spent banging my head against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll say 14, skating at a skating rink, ice skating rink. And I had been for a while trying to screw up the courage to tell her that I was actually interested in her. And I knew she didn't have a huge amount of interest in dating, but I always kind of figured, well, that's just because she hasn't found the right guy, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Once she sees this as I see this and realizes that, of course, we get along so well, it's just obvious, it's natural, why wouldn't we?
It is logical, submit female.
Pretty much, exactly. So we're skating around, and I finally work up enough courage and manage to not fall over on ice skates long enough to skate up next to her and say,
"Oh, this is tough. Wow.
Yeah, try pulling this off while on ice skates when you only skate once a year."
Talk about taking it up a level of difficulty. Yeah, I don't think I've ever tried to maintain balance while I was doing this. Please go on. This is...
I don't know if it was stupidity or genius. Probably mostly stupidity. Definitely wasn't setting the bar high. Skated up next to her and said something along the lines of, "I think I'm falling in love with you."
Oh, good. Okay, open up with the big guns.
Yep. Like I say, smoothness is not something I've learned.
Blindsider.
She responded in a way that I thought was playful. Flirting back, as it were. And I didn't realize until like 45 minutes later, an hour later, when we were done ice skating, was actually a more serious reaction of, "You can't be serious. Surely you're not saying that." And I'm not quoting directly here, but just strong undertones of, "This is not what I want to hear from a close friend." And so we got off of the ice as we were finishing up, and I had said something to the effect of, "So what about it?" And she said, "Oh, wait, you were serious out there?" Which is never the response you're looking to get. But, I was serious.
Oh, ow.
Oh, give me a couple of days to think about it, which I didn't know at the time, but that's also an extremely bad sign. So I got a nice handwritten letter a couple of days later, explaining how she thought of me as a great friend, but nothing more, and could we please not screw up the friendship, to which I filed that away and said, well... clearly, she's just not ready yet. She needs a little bit more time to grow accustomed to the idea.
I have to admit, I'm impressed, Joe. Like, my heart would have just kind of free-fallen at this point, and I would have written it off, and my life would have been over. But you are made of sterner stuff.
I mean, there was a certain extent to which I was bitterly disappointed, but it was... We're great friends. Surely she will see the logic in this eventually, because... romance is nothing, if not logical, when you get right down to it. So I sat on it for about 6 months, and, would occasionally feel things out tentatively. Continued doing that for the next 4 years, until I went off to college. And we stayed good friends throughout the entire process, but I was never able to convince her to actually go out with me.
Now, I'm curious, though, were you still carrying the torch throughout this time? Did you have other crushes? Were you just kind of stuck in this grip?
No other crushes. I was carrying the torch the entire 4 years, convinced that eventually it was going to win out. It turns out I'm capable of self-delusion, but I was convinced the entire 4 years that it would eventually work out. And we hung out a lot. We did a lot of stuff. You know, I'd go over to her house after school. We'd take long walks around the neighborhood, talking things over. I gave her a birthday gift 1 year. So I went to the bookstore and picked out a book for her, which was Emma by Jane Austen. And didn't know who Jane Austen was, didn't know what the book was, but the book described itself as a comedy. I thought, you can't go wrong there. So I gave it to her. She read it, came back a couple of weeks later and said, "This book is hilarious. You should read it. You would really enjoy it." Now, when your romantic crush says you should read something, do the smart thing and you read it. I did, and discovered, to my surprise, that Jane Austen actually is well and hilarious, if you can understand the period well enough to understand the humor. So then that was something else that she and I had in common. We read through multiple Jane Austen books from that point forward, Sense and Sensibility and Pride and Prejudice, among others. And so we'd go
Yeah, it's like the equivalent of watching chick flicks. It's homeschooler chick lit.
Exactly.
It's gotta love that.
Exactly. So we did that over the years, and I kept convincing myself that, you know, sooner or later, it will all click for her, and she will see that this is right and proper. Never did, of course, so I went to college in a completely different state and came home for Thanksgiving freshman year, and by this point her cousin had moved up from Florida and was living in Virginia Beach. He joined the Navy, and he and I got along pretty well. So I asked him, I said, "You got to explain this to her. You got to explain it. You got to help me here, man." So he did. I mean, great guy, he did. I was over at her house sometime Thanksgiving weekend, and he did he tried very hard to sell me, and then finally came back outside and said, "No, I'm sorry, man. It's just not happening. It's just not going to happen." And that was the point where I buried that crush and moved on. But so as far as high school romances, there was just the one, and it was entirely one-sided.
Well, there you go. I mean, I understand the long-term crush that rejects you and you still, you know, soldier on for a while carrying that torch. For me, well, first of all, I should just say that every problem I've ever had with the opposite sex is, in theory, something that I created for myself. I mean, I can blame upbringing as well. And to some extent, I do actually, but, So first of all, everything I learned about, it becomes clear in retrospect, but everything I learned about romance, I really learned from stories. And so I had, and as a Christian, I couldn't allow myself the baser motivation. So I was basically stuck in romantic mode throughout high school and college. And because of philosophy and theology, a lot of which my other Christian friends didn't agree with, you know, this was me pulling ahead, but, you know, not only that, but I couldn't do much more than moon and dream of the future. So I had these great storybook ideas, and not only that, but despite not really being able to talk well with my peers in high school, I thought of women very much as a whole different kettle of fish. So not only could I not talk to people in general very well, but I couldn't talk to women specifically. That is to say, while we were friends, Joe, friends in person, I spent all 5 years in Norfolk, Virginia in complete thrall to my friend's sister. But it was high school when I really started carrying this painful torch. There was this one girl, Kat, that took up a disproportionate amount of time. And this is one of the responsibilities of being the oldest sibling. My poor brother followed in my footsteps on this. There's a way to, when you do big romantic gestures at the outset, it puts a lot of pressure on a person who may not have actually thought of you that way before. And it's entirely possible that if you just, you know, kind of sidled in there and started things off low-key, that things might have gone better, rather than, say, blasting rose petals out of a cannon and while playing a song and or what have you. But yeah, Kat Toussaint was my primary crush throughout high school, and to my credit, I had her for my prom date both years, junior and senior, which is particularly impressive when you consider that how much of a hash I made of junior prom. That she went back with me again is really testament to the woman's character. No, actually, that's another thing of maturation. You tend to look back and give kids credit when you have more experience, and she did that as well. And even though she didn't return my affection, she came to appreciate it it for what it was. But she stopped speaking to me after a while because of that date. And let me tell you how that went. So I went to prom with her, and she's happily married now in Australia, by the way. Great woman. I think if there was one thing that really showed that she was the one, it was her having a nigh equal command of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
There you go.
Yeah. Great sense of humor. She was funny. She was pretty. Didn't really have much more in common. I was this Christian with an oppressive theology, and she was this liberal Jewish girl. I've always been attracted to free spirits. When you are a tightly wound person, free spirits are extremely attractive people. And in fact, I married one. So I worked up the gumption to ask her to prom. Never and didn't explicitly append to this because I'm into you. And she was, when she was totally cool with it and went for it. I actually recall asking her twice because I didn't register the first time that she said yes. Or rather, I had asked her, or I had stipulated my desire to have her come as my prom date. And rather than wait for her answer, I began to launch into my 3-point argument, or whatever I had ready, and she had to say yes twice. For my romantic gestures, I knew that she was a huge soccer ball fanatic, so, and this would be an ongoing theme with me, I made a papier-mâché soccer ball and put her corsage inside and sealed it up. And so when I went to pick her up, I kicked that sucker to her. And her parents, who thought of their daughter as a bit of a tomboy and were just actually relieved to see a guy in the room who they probably weren't blind enough to not see, wasn't head over heels for the girl. And I think they appreciated my presence. We had a good date. We spent the whole time in the company of others. I had one slow dance with her, but otherwise couldn't work up the nerve to even stay around her very much. Ugh. No. I was a bundle of nerves. I managed to get the photo. I managed to get the slow dance. Technically, I got everything I wanted out of that date. But in practice, I don't even think she'd registered that I was truly interested in her. So that was an impressive feat.
That takes skill to pull off.
That's another thing actually I've learned over the years, how to communicate better and be more aggressive. But I hit upon a plan to ask her for a second date, at which point, you know, it was almost, to my spineless self, this made perfect sense. We were going on a date without the pressure of romance necessarily. She would see what a great date I was and enjoy my company. And then when I asked her for a second one, she would say yes. That was the strategy.
Logical.
Yeah, exactly. No, I was a clever little schemer. I had this planned out. So then I had to come up with my second date idea. And so what I did was I went down to the, in an episode which remained famous for the rest of my high school experience, an inter-institutional memory, I went down to the basement to the school newspaper printing office, which had, by the way, the school's only Macs, and a full print press. And I stayed down there working like a little demon in my shop and came up with and printed off a front page news page. And, you know, with a little beating of weather, it just looked like the front page of a newspaper. It wasn't attached to anything. It was a front sheet. But I put in pictures of us on the prom dance and made a headline and accompanying news stories out of the fact that I intended to ask her out again. I was extremely self-deprecating in this. When asked for comments, I think one line was, when asked for comment as to the chances, God said to give him a break. You know, that sort of thing. Essentially, you know, Adam's taken the shot of a lifetime here. Let's see how it works, Gerald. And then I wrapped this front page over the front page of the real newspaper, and I deposited it in her mailbox. Fire in the hole.
To press the plunger and run.
Yeah, exactly. And then I waited for the enthusiastic yes to work its way to my telephone. What came instead was pure undiluted rage. I mentioned before that her parents saw her as something of a tomboy, and that her father was always asking when she was going to date a guy or who she was interested in and so forth, because apparently he cared. She thought, by saying that I had no chance, that I was calling her undateable, is what she said.
Oof.
Yeah, I hit an insecurity mine that I had no idea even existed. How could I have known I existed? She walked on air to me. You know, the idea that she had her own issues was inconceivable. She was my manic pixie dream girl. And she was ticked. Oh, wow. Yeah, I went from, it wasn't just rejection, you know, I had made an enemy. and not only that, but one who was ready the next day to, you know, to use the evidence that I had left in her hand to my full detriment. I remember rumors that that the football players were planning on beating me up, before being called into the vice principal's office, who had a copy of the paper and was a lot more understanding than most people. He still wrote me up for improper use of school resources.
Adding insult to injury.
Yeah, that was my first detention. and also informed me that this could be construed as sexual harassment, which even today I think was a jerk thing of him to say. But nevertheless, perhaps, you know, in this ultra namby-pamby school, 900 spoiled rich kids, you know, was entirely feasible. Anyway, so I definitely ended up feeling like dirt. And of course, the entire school knew about it by lunch that next morning.
I thought I had it bad being friend zone, but you managed to go straight to enemy zone.
Yeah, anyway, I begged her forgiveness, and to her credit, because remember, she actually thinks I did all this, to her credit, she gave it. And not only that, but the next year I asked her to go to prom with me again, and she said, all right. I've always wondered, actually. A part of me wants to ask, but I feel like too much of a loser to really do it. But I wonder if maybe at some point she didn't actually start liking me. And I was just too much of a fool to see it. Because there were, you know, she became really, there was a time frame when she started inviting me to do things. She was really friendly. And I was really good at missing cues. I mean, when you're not well socialized, it's very easy to miss flirting. And boys either go two ways. Either they think that every girl that is nice to them is flirting with them, or they assume that nobody's flirting with them and they miss. And I was definitely the latter. And I asked for the paperback one time because I thought it was cool, and she wouldn't give it to me. She considers it a nice memento from her high school days now, which, you know, I'm pleased with. I think that's charming. And not only that, but that's what netted me my college recommendation letter, actually. The English teacher who proofread that for me, although I didn't rat him out, and also gave me my half credit every semester for that. He wrote about that for my college recommendation letter.
Nice.
And that's what went to the admissions office and got me into school. So there's the big unwieldy story for tonight.
Well, I should say, I didn't throw this in. I said I only had one crush, and that's basically true. But I did manage to actually make it to prom in spite of being homeschooled.
You went to a prom? No, I would never have known this if you hadn't volunteered it. Please tell me.
It was either prom or junior prom. I honestly do not remember which. But I had worked for 6 weeks one summer at Triple R Ranch, which is a summer camp in Chesapeake, Virginia, working as a junior counselor, which was a sweet role to have because you got to be semi in charge, but there was a real counselor in the cabin with you. So mostly you got to enjoy yourself while exercising some small amount of responsibility over the kids in the cabin. So it was a great 6 weeks. And there were a number of us that worked together multiple weeks in a row. You know, people would come and go being junior counselors. But Jessica was one of the ones that was there, if not the entire time I was, a great majority of the time I was. And she and I hit it off, continued hanging out after we had both finished working there that summer, and primarily communicated through email, which she lived in Norfolk. I mean, not that far from me, but primarily communicated through email. And at the time, that was when Juno email was first a thing. This email service, not an internet service, but this email service where you could get an email address and you would dial into one of their phone numbers, you would download your email and then immediately disconnect. And they had a client program that you would run on your computer and read in all of the emails you downloaded, compose emails, and then when you were ready to send, you would do a quick dial-in, connect, send everything in a burst, and then hang up again. So it wasn't tying up the phone line, which from the parents' perspective was a very good thing, but did allow you to have a decent amount of contact with the outside world. So she had a Juno email address as well, and we would email back and forth, in some ways using it almost like instant messenger at times. I would download, see that I had an email, disconnect, read hers, compose one of my own, send it, check mail again about 10 minutes later, and I would have another one from her right back and forth over the course of an afternoon. So in the course of one of our conversations, she was talking about how prom was coming up at her school, but nobody had really asked her out, and she wasn't sure if she was going to be able to go. And it went back and forth. I don't remember how long, but I eventually said, you know, working up my courage, well, I suppose if you really want to go, nobody that's asking you, which is frankly incomprehensible to me, but if no one else has asked you, I'd be willing to go with you, just so you have someone to go with, you know. Obviously not a date, absolutely not a date at all, but I'd be willing.
Yeah.
I'd be willing to go with you. So she was amenable. You know, I seem to remember there was a series of emails back and forth negotiating the exact language because neither one of us wanted a that it was a date. So it was all about, well, you don't have to. I wouldn't mind that much. Well, if you're sure you don't mind. And so I got all dressed up and she got all dressed up and we went to her prom together. Which was awkward because I knew absolutely nothing about dancing slow or otherwise. So I think we did one sort of pretend slow dance together and then a bunch of just jumping around to the music.
Yep.
Had a wonderful evening. Never actually, aside from that, dated. Like you, I've kind of always wondered if maybe if I hadn't been so stuck on my main crush, if there would have been a possibility for something there. Totally water under the bridge now. But yes, that was my experience in spite of being homeschooled, actually getting to go to the prom.
Well, I'm glad you got to do that, Joe. That's, I don't know. It's like everything else. You know, you don't miss it if you don't really do it or if you never do it. But at the same time, it seems like such an iconic thing you hear about. And getting to see what it was all about was cool for me. I'm glad I did it, even if, like, so much of my life I just spend it stressed out of my gourd.
I think I have yet to meet anyone who actually enjoyed their prom, but it is a rite of passage for high school.
Yeah, exactly. I would agree with that. I think there were people who enjoyed it, actually. I always wonder about them. I'd love to... Those are the people I'd like to... I know exactly who I should ask, actually. I know where I can find him and everything. He's not a friend, but my school president for the senior class and all that other nonsense, that guy, I should ask him, because I'm sure he had a good time. Well, Joe, I'm sure we ran a little longer than last episode, but the time flew fast for me. This was interesting to hear about. I'm glad to learn about what I missed.
It was a good conversation, and it was good. I've always kind of wondered, what were you up to during those years when I was doing so much? And it's good to finally have that conversation and find out a little bit about it.
Yeah. Strict summary, going big and then going home. all right, Joe. Well, tell you what, let's... end it here, and next time we will get into some of the heavier topics, or maybe not. I don't know. It's funny, we're so used to discussing these things that this is gonna be a little more typical. I feel like I'm not even religion is what we have on the docket.
Yeah, talking about ourselves feels a little bit weird, whereas talking about religion feels like, well, just another Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. There's something to that, really, that we've always felt comfortable discussing these great abstract concepts and so forth, but rarely felt the need to tell each other what was going on in our lives.
Well, as a confirmed introvert, it's far easier talking about grand concepts than it is talking about oneself.
That's true. But I think we did pretty good tonight.
I'd like to think so. Well, until next time.
Until next time, Joe. Bye-bye.